Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. This podcast is powered by Louisville Slugger. Leave your mark with the 2014 attack, raid, and assault bat lineup this season. Stronger, lighter, farther with Louisville Slugger. Aaron Fitt he's gone farther. I don't know about lighter, but he's definitely gone stronger this year on the travel circuit for college baseball. Aaron, you've been around the world. You've been to the first half of the eastern half of the country. I love how many of our commenters on the top 25 rankings love to talk about our bias now that you've moved back to North Carolina. Seeing how you lived in Southern California for 3 years, and the West Coast folks who complain about our lack of West Coast teams out there. I didn't notice that you lived in Laguna, and nobody leaves Laguna.
Well, shoot,
so it doesn't matter where you live.
I mean, you know, I go see Cal State Fullerton for two games out in the Midwest. Go see UNLV out there. I'm not hearing from West Coast people about the coverage. I wrote about these teams. Where are you people? Come on, guys. You just want to complain about the lack of coverage? Come read what we're writing.
I don't get it.
What's wrong with these people?
Well, they just don't do that. They come to the poll, and they come with what they want to say, and they just talk about the poll. I do think that, thankfully...
Guys,
read more than that.
Listen, if you're listening to this podcast, I probably don't have to tell you this, okay? But there's a lot more that goes on in Baseball America than just a list of 25 teams every Monday. We put a lot of thought into everything we do.
A little bit more.
We produce a lot of words, okay? And words, you know, I don't know about you, John, but I like words.
I value words. I say a lot of words, but I generally put some thought behind them. And if not some thought, then some emotion. I hope to do both. But usually more emotion than
I might
thought.
Just have emotion today. I don't know if there's any thought going on.
I don't know. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be a great podcast. We got fired up Fitzy today. But I love that you have been really making this concerted effort to – you've basically seen a lot of different teams every weekend. And one of the best parts about that is that the teams in North Carolina this year, which we thought would be better, have not been very good. But you've gotten out and seen a lot of the better teams in the country and a lot of the good teams. And it certainly feels, Aaron, like this is a very – I mean, I hate to use the parody word, but there's a clutch of elite teams. I think this happens every year. There's a clutch of elite teams, but there's a deeper group of muddled this year. I think it's going to be harder to figure out 64.
Oh, gosh.
Because there's just not a lot of separation between Team 20 and Team 80.
It really is most – striking in the SEC.
Right.
You know, when you're trying to figure out what order to put those teams in the top 25, good luck.
I mean,
you know, it's you just could drive yourself crazy. Well, this team beat this team, and this team beat that team. I mean, right now, for instance, LSU had a nice weekend. They swept Mississippi State.
Yep.
Okay, so how far do we move up LSU? Well, they were swept last weekend by Florida. And to me, a sweep is more meaningful. We go on the road, you lose 2 out of 3, fine. And that's about what you're supposed to do in the
SEC.
Right. Don't get swept.
That's right.
If you do get swept, to me, you know, that says a little bit more.
Especially considering LSU was ranked in the top 10 at the time, and Florida was unranked at the time of that series.
Yep.
And Florida swept the series, and it's not like Florida's some experienced juggernaut. It's a extremely young team.
Sure.
And the volatile nature of the Southeastern Conference shown again this weekend, where LSU sweeps Mississippi State, and Florida goes 1-3 on the week. I mean, it's just not a – Alabama now the top record in the SEC. And, Aaron, let's talk about the Crimson Tide a little bit since we're on this SEC subject. Not only is the Crimson Tide the best record in conference play at 8-4, but they've also won a series on the road. And Alabama's played a fairly tough SEC schedule at this point.
Yeah, they have. And, you know, they've handled themselves well even early in the season. You know, the non-conference series that kind of sticks out to you. We've talked about this on the podcast, but, you know, going on the road to Lafayette, tough place to play. You know, they don't get SEC teams going there and play weekend series. And Alabama, to their credit, did so, and they didn't get swept. And right now, you know, Louisiana Lafayette's 30-3, and they're destroying everybody. And, hey, you go there and you win a Sunday game to avoid a sweep. That actually looks pretty good right now.
It's just there's a toughness factor
that
we have been told from coaches – over and over the years, that's what separates a team getting swept and not getting swept is that toughness of a team, because that three-game series, that's what the whole sport's built around.
Yes.
And not getting swept in those three games tells you a little bit about a toughness factor, and Alabama has shown that pretty consistently this year.
Yeah, and, you know, they got into SEC play. They won 2 out of 3 at home from Kentucky. They swept Ole Miss at home, so they've taken care of business at home. They went to Arkansas, and again, didn't get swept. They won the first game.
Right.
You know, South Carolina just went to Arkansas, did the same thing, lost 2 out of 3. Arkansas is pitching. I mean, they're starting to, I was talking to somebody this weekend about those guys. You know, now that they have Killian back and you know, kind of dealing.
Yep. That guy's good.
With Jalen Beeks and Chris Oliver, that's a really good weekend rotation.
That is more of your usual vintage Arkansas that we're used to seeing. Yep. I mean, it really is pretty impressive that year after year, the last 10 years it seems like, Dave Van Horn and that staff have just brought in pretty good arms, and a lot of those guys get better at Arkansas too. They're not always high draft guys,
right?
Out of high school. So they, you know, some of them are Ryan Standing. Hey, he was an unsigned second rounder out of high school, but some of them are guys who weren't big time guys out of high school, really developed there. It's a pretty long track record now of Arkansas having real elite arms.
And that team is now back in the top 25 mix. So, you know, they're 20-12 now. They you know, did lose a series last weekend at Mississippi State, but didn't get swept. I mean, they got a couple of series wins that are quality. You know, most of these teams are doing the same thing. They're taking care of business at home.
Yep.
Winning 2 out of 3. And that's why a team like Alabama this weekend goes to Texas A&M and wins a road series. Hey, you know, I mean,
that's right.
We don't see that very often. So now they've won 3 out of their 4 conference series. And they won a road series, and they've beaten ranked teams, and you know, those are all quality teams that they've played. So Alabama sitting pretty now at 8-4, and they've got Auburn coming in this weekend. It's a home series for Alabama. You know, we know it's a rivalry, but Auburn's all of a sudden scuffling the last 2 weeks. You know, Alabama has a chance to give itself a little bit of a cushion this weekend.
It's the volatile nature of this year's Southeastern Conference, Aaron. To me, they do kind of. Not the only, they're the thing that's deepest in this parity, but it really, it's just very rare to see an SEC team win a series on the road this year. That's, again, that is what stands out about Alabama. South Carolina loses its second series on the road this weekend. Vanderbilt in the series that you were at in Knoxville. The glare of the Sun Sphere, too much for the Commodores.
Right.
They lose that series. And I know you're writing a little bit more about it for tomorrow's Three Strikes, but a little sneaky rivalry there that's been rekindled. And it, you know, it can't be a rivalry when it gets one-sided. And it feels like it used to be one-sided in the Tennessee over Vanderbilt. The last 10 years has been more one-sided in Vanderbilt's favor as that program has ascended and Tennessee had its troubles. This is on its third coach in the last decade.
Right.
But a huge win this weekend, a series win for Dave Serrano and the Vols.
It was a big series win, you know, and Dave Serrano, he pretty much said it on Saturday after they won that game. He said this was a huge turning point potentially for our season. I mean, you know, they lost, what, 7 out of 8? Or I think at that point, 7 out of their last 8 games. It would have been 8 out of 9. They lost a third straight series.
Yeah.
You know, they were in a funk, and they showed a lot of character coming back in that game. It was a back-and-forth wild game. It wasn't pretty. There were a lot of errors on both sides. There was some weirdness, you know. there was
umpiring calls, I'm going to guess.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there were 2 instances where the home plate umpire awarded a ball for Vanderbilt pitcher licking his fingers. And one of them was the key spot in the 9th inning, you know. It was ball 4 to start that rally, really. And I think that might have rattled Carson Fulmer a little bit, but Tennessee built off of that. And you got Nathaniel Maggio coming in there to in the 9th inning. He'd been struggling. He didn't start the game against the lefty. They started a right-handed hitter, and you know, he was confident. He thought he had a good at bat against Homer the previous day, and he came up with a big hit. And you know, they celebrated that thing pretty emphatically.
Robustly, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there was a little bit of almost a dog pile out there in the infield after the base hit, and then after the game, you know, 25 minutes later, that was a loud locker room. You know, he's walking down the hall, you can just hear him roaring, and it was a big game for that program.
It meant a lot. To Tennessee, that's, you know, that's kind of neat to see a regular season game mean that much. But in a sport, Aaron, where we're at a 64-team tournament out of nearly 300 schools, with a proposal to expand to 72 teams put forward by Todd Whitting and the American Athletic Association, American Athletic Conference coaches, the AAC. Yeah, there's something too. That's something that we can discuss later in the podcast. But to me, that SEC, it's just so topsy-turvy in that league. It's very hard to pick. It's hard to imagine a team really busting out. Kentucky's other team, Aaron, that we've talked about. I feel like this is not new ground, but I do think it's important that Kentucky's 6-6, but at the same time, Kentucky's maybe had one of the tougher schedules in SEC play. Their road series have been at Alabama and Vanderbilt. Their home series have been South Carolina and Florida. It has to get a little bit easier, doesn't it, for them in the league? I mean, it's just the league is very difficult, but yeah. I mean, like, Kentucky's acquitted itself pretty well by going 6-6 so far.
Right, and they've got Missouri and Auburn at home. Those are series that are, you know, you would think they have a chance at least to sweep those series,
right.
One of those series. I mean, and Auburn, I think, we think is much improved. And Missouri, I mean, there's no easy outs in this league.
I mean, Missouri's got a guy on Fridays who's one of the top prospects in the draft, Brent Groves. I mean, this guy's got a legit big arm. We heard about him last summer in the pitching for Newport in the NECBL. I mean, this guy's got a big arm. You know, when he's on the mound, they're competitive with anybody. They're a competitive club.
And they just, you know, they just won a series last weekend on the road at Auburn. So,
right.
Which Auburn had been in the rankings at that point. So, you know, there's no gimmies. But, you know, we've talked about this. People, and you get people on the West Coast that say, oh, how do you have all these SEC teams ranked? Well, the SEC is good.
That's right.
They're just really good. It's a deep league. And it's a lot deeper than the Pac-12 this year, you know.
No doubt about it.
That's just, I know that people look at tradition. I mean, if you're used to the Pac-12 being a great league, and historically it is. Incredible
Correct.
History. That doesn't mean it's great every year. It's not great this year.
It's just not great, Aaron. And what a weird weekend in the Pac-12, and maybe one of the games of the weekend was that series finale, Washington-Oregon, where the Huskies rally for a 5-4 win. To win the series, you've talked a little bit about what kind of has made the Huskies tick this year. We talked about the new ballpark, but to me it's almost a sign of a league. When a non-traditional power is in first place in the league, that's usually a sign the league isn't very good. If Washington does this for a long time, like Oregon State has done it now, that's different. But to me, the traditional powers in the Pac-12 are almost all down. Arizona State, Arizona, USC, Stanford. Those are the national championship teams in that league in the last 30 years. Well, I have to go back 30 years for Arizona State. No offense, Sun Devils. That would be more offensive to call them Wildcats.
Yeah.
Arizona's won recently. It's been 25 years since Stanford won, but Stanford's certainly been to Omaha a lot over the years. USC has the most championships, but I mean, UCLA is the new power on the block. In the last 10 years, the best program has really been Oregon State. Yeah. That's it. Oregon State's been the best program in the last 10 years. From a consistency standpoint,
no doubt.
Two championships. We do have back-to-back Pac-12 champs in UCLA and Arizona. But Arizona's not going to regionals this year, Aaron.
No, they're not.
You know,
no.
Alex Mejia and Seth Mejia's brain are not walking through that door. UCLA, as we talked about in multiple podcasts, ravaged by injuries. A third of their lineup gone to start the year. Two big keys out for the whole year.
And kudos to them for fighting through. And they're you know, they were in the top 25 up until this past week. Lost their second straight series. But they're not a regional host kind of team for me. You know, they'll probably be a 2 or 3 seed in a regional. And, you know, they're okay.
But the top of the Big West is very strong.
Yeah.
We've had 3 Big West teams in the rankings for the last few weeks. Cal Poly wins that showdown with UC Santa Barbara this weekend.
And that was a good series, it looked like. Really, 3 very competitive games.
Fullerton still scuffling along. I don't know if they're still getting Fs with their offensive defense like Hookie gave them last week. But back to the the Pac-12 real quick. What's make UW the best team in the league to this point, and can the Huskies sustain that?
That's a great question. And, you know, I said last week in the chat, all right, let's see what they do against Oregon.
Yeah.
If they win that series against Oregon, I'm going to buy in, because that's the 4th straight conference series now. And they did win that series against Oregon. You know, and again, it was a competitive series, and all 3 of those games were. And the Sunday game, you know, they fall behind by 2 runs in the 10th. And then Andrew Ely gets the big 3-run double, I think, to win it. And you know, they had a celebration that was kind of like that Tennessee.
Right.
This was even more of a true dog pile. But, you know, it's Washington.
They are the Huskies, so they're, dog pile,
hey,
sure.
Hey, all right. Fair enough.
Although, don't they have like a beagle mascot or something like that?
It's not a beagle, but it's
like a hunting dog or something.
Yeah, like, I don't know.
It's like got a droopy-eared dog.
Droopy-eared dog. That's what it is.
No offense, Vols fans. I just don't know. But forgive my ignorance.
But anyway, Washington, you know, for them to win that series was a big deal for a program that has been irrelevant for a long time now.
That's
since
it.
Since Tim Lincecum left, it's been
irrelevant. That's the word.
So, hey, you know, it's one of the great things about college baseball is that you get this kind of genuine emotion in the regular season.
Right.
It means a lot. You know, and I know people, Vanderbilt fans, were, you know, criticizing Tennessee for dogpiling, act like you've been there before. Well, guess what? These guys haven't been there before.
Exactly.
It's a big deal.
Why should they do that? They have not been there before.
It was emotional. It's a, you know, in both these cases, Washington, Tennessee's were big, big series. And signs that these programs are really making real progress, and you know, good for them. I mean, they care.
The flip side of that, Aaron, is that one of the reasons I'm not 100% sold on Washington is that is Oregon a measuring stick? I'm down on the Ducks.
Yeah.
No offense to Coach Horton and the Ducks and the resident BA staffer and Oregon alum Josh Norris, but
what have they done?
What has Oregon done? I mean, really, what is the Oregon resume is? They won the series against, and they've swept, they've won games against teams, they've won series against teams they probably should have beaten. They swept USC at USC. That's probably the best looking series on the
record. Sweeping LMU probably at LMU is pretty comparable. I mean, LMU's been a decent club in the WCC.
I mean, isn't three quarters of Oregon's team from Southern California anyway? Yeah. So those are like quasi home games for them anyway.
Right, exactly. Whenever they travel, whenever I saw them at USC the last 3 years, it seemed like, you know, there were a lot of Oregon fans there. I mean, in some cases, more than USC fans, certainly.
Yeah, so, they won the series at Arizona State. But, I mean, this year, the Pac-12, it's just down. Arizona State is like a borderline regional team.
They look like, right now, a solid regional team to me.
Okay.
The last 3 weeks, they've turned it around.
Okay.
I mean, they weren't before that. They were probably, if I had tried to do a field of 64, mid-March, they weren't in it. But since then, they won back-to-back series at Oregon State and UCLA.
And they won against USC. You're right. Three straight series wins.
You know, that's a team. I mean, and somebody asked in the chat today, and I didn't actually answer the question, but that was a good question. Did you think about, you know, putting Arizona State at the back of the rankings instead of Oregon? I mean, these are two teams trending in opposite directions right now. Sun Devils have won three straight series. Oregon's lost two in a row. I still think the bodies of work, I mean, there's still some holes.
Kind of a push.
It's a push. So we kind of put Oregon on notice and left them there in that 25 spot another week. But, you know, Arizona State is hitting right now, which a lot of teams aren't. They're actually scoring some runs. Their offense seems like it's coming around. And, Lilick and Kellogg, certainly a good 1-2 punch for those lefties.
No doubt.
The rest of the staff I'm still not sold on. I'm just not sold on the depth of that staff in between those first two guys and Ryan Burr.
I mean, there was a reason why Ryan Burr was in the weekend rotation to start off with. Yeah. I mean, most college teams would like to build there from the bullpen forward.
Sure.
But I don't think they had an option starting-wise, so they tried Ryan Burr there. So it's going to be interesting to see. But that Pac-12, I do think it's telling to me, Aaron, that Pac-12 just is not – it's not a good year for the Pac-12. It's not a good year in the Atlantic Coast Conference either. Florida State and Virginia, however, remain 1-2. And one of the real things – I had two takeaways from the ACC weekend. Number one is that Virginia, Nathan Kirby, that's about as dominant a start. That's the best pitch game of the year, isn't it?
Not?
In a year of no hitters,
yeah.
And we've had a plethora of them this year, you can't do better. What,
18 strikeouts, one walk, only 119 pitches in a no hitter. That's incredible. This guy's made the leap. I spoke with Brian O'Connor about him today. We'll have a piece on Kirby tomorrow morning. Giving it away, Golden Spike spotlight for Kirby. Big surprise. But I mean, this guy is right now, John. I think if you're right here, who's the ACC pitcher of the year? Carlos Rodon, and it's not Luke Weaver or any other bigger names. I mean, maybe Gossett's got a case at Clemson, but I think it's Nathan Kirby. I think he's, you know, this is a guy who had a 6 ERA last year as a freshman and as a middle reliever, and now he's number one starter for the number two team in the country, and he's been a stud. He's been really good week after week.
He's been outstanding. Well, the surprise team up there are Wake Forest and Miami, Aaron.
Yep.
Miami, not a huge surprise, but they have won back-to-back series on the road, and they swept back-to-back series on the road to go to 11-4 in the league. But how about Wake Forest? I got to be honest, this is a team I just don't know very much about. Tom Walter, though, has a pretty good track record before he got to Wake Forest, turning programs around, getting them to regionals, turned things around in George Washington, made George Washington relevant for the first time since John Castleberry was there.
Nice.
Then he did it at New Orleans. And now this weekend they go and beat a Maryland team that has been a battle-tested team, a team that I went out on a limb and said they were going to regionals. Since then, the Terps have repaid me with back-to-back series losses. But this Wake Forest team, you know, feels like, Aaron, this has just been kind of more of a grinded out team that doesn't have a star, but they certainly showed that they can hit, because Jake Stinnett, Maryland's ace, was up to 97 in the seventh inning on Friday night. They, you know, scored six runs off of him, a couple of home runs. This team is this the Ryan Johnson, Jamie D'Antona, turn of the century vintage Wake Forest Demon Deacons, or more of just a gritty team?
No, they're a blue collar bunch, and they've, you know, they do have some veterans. I mean, that's one thing that you like about this team that kind of stands out is some of the seniors. You know, Jack Fisher on the mound, and you know, Evan Stevens has had a nice little year for him. He's a good player. He's another senior. You know, Connor Kinnearty, you know, middle infielder, is just a gamer and a senior. I mean, so they've got some of these older players, you know, that have really performed and kind of carried them. Matt Conway is another one. I think he's a third-year senior.
Wow.
So, you know, they've got some experience, and we've talked so many times about how much that matters.
No doubt.
But, you know, the talent doesn't blow you away. But, I mean, this group of players has had their moments over the last few years where they've kind of shown glimpses of it, and, you know, here and there you're like, hey, maybe Wake Forest is onto something, and then they haven't been able to sustain it. So, you know, right now the fact that they're, what are they, 8-4 in the ACC?
I think they're 10-5 now.
10-5 now. They were 8-4 last week. You know, granted, Notre Dame, Boston College are two of the teams they've played. So those are the ACC bottom feeders.
Correct.
But they did win a road series at Georgia Tech to start ACC play. Not that Georgia Tech is great.
But Georgia Tech is a similar team.
Yep.
You know, very gritty, you know, pitching, defense-oriented kind of team, whereas Wake Forest would be a little bit more offensive. But neither team has, like, big-time star power.
It's just hard to know how good Wake Forest is, because the other teams that they've played in the ACC, I mean, you know, next week they're at North Carolina. You think, well, that's a measuring stick, but is it?
Right.
North Carolina's like Oregon. They're, you know, they're a name brand, but
exactly.
You know, I mean,
and North Carolina might be the kind of team that looks back at this weekend where they didn't sweep Boston College, where they let an 8-5 lead or 8-3 lead whatever get away. Where they really look back at that and think, what? How did we not sweep that series? You know, I mean, all credit to BC.
BC is not any good, though. I mean, all credit to those guys, you know.
They're
a lot of respect to that coaching staff, but they're just not any good, that team.
Correct. This league feels like the Pac-12 in that it's a little top-heavy. It's a bigger league, so it might get more teams to regionals. But proportionally, I think it's very similar to the Pac-12.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. You know, like you said, 14-team league versus the Pac is
11 for baseball.
11
because
baseball.
Colorado doesn't play.
That's right. So, I mean, you know, they're going to get more teams in, and that's fine to me.
Right. meanwhile, Aaron, we do have Louisiana Lafayette, who we spoke of earlier with regard to Alabama. That's one of their losses. 30-3. Certainly, Louisiana Lafayette's schedule has not been strong. There's, you know, this is, and last year, the Sun Belt was a pretty strong league, but a lot of those teams have left the Sun Belt. You've got, you know, traditionally solid programs like Texas State, South Alabama that had a nice year last year in this league. But Georgia State, Troy, feels like that league in general, some of the decent baseball programs in that league are a little bit down.
I thought Georgia State was going to be pretty good this year.
Right, we thought they'd be pretty offensive, and it hasn't worked out so far.
15-18 right now.
For the Fighting Fradies. But this is not a great league. Louisiana Lafayette, do they have to doubt? What does Louisiana Lafayette have to do to be a top eight national seed? Do they have to keep up this ridiculously torrid pace?
I think they can, you know, they don't have to go, they don't have to play, you know, 900 ball the rest of the way. I mean, like they have to this point. But, they need to dominate the league because it's going to be a one bid league, I think, at the end of the day. And there's a couple of teams right now hanging around the periphery RPI-wise, but I don't see that holding up.
Penetrating around the perimeter?
Around the perimeter, like Dana Bowles.
Sorry, I love it. I love it. That's what, a Bob Cousy reference?
Cousy reference.
All right. Nice.
Sorry about that. Arkansas State, Western Kentucky, those are only two teams that have really kind of decent RPIs right now. If we're talking about potentially on the fringes of the at-large discussion, but that's going to be a one-bid league. And unless Lafayette loses the conference tournament, then they'll get that large. But, you know, if they dominate their league, they'll be a top eight seed, I think. I mean, you know, even if their RPI does line down a little bit, you know, I think the committee rewards teams that have gaudy records like that.
Yeah, I mean, usually really good records leads to really good RPIs.
That's true.
So, yep. I mean, that's, you know, it is mostly a function of how many games you win. Not completely, but that's the number one big factor.
Well, it's only, I mean, it was 25% is your own record.
Right. Right.
50% is your opponent's record, and 25 is your
And there's all the little new factors that are in there. So it's hard to have a bad RPI when you go 30-3. You have to play a lot of, you know, you have to play a SWAC or MEAC exclusive schedule to be at the bottom.
A Great West, as Utah Valley can attest that one
that's,
year.
That's right. That's right.
Not defunct Great West.
Correct. That's a good pull. I'm the one making Great West conference references. You know, we forgot to preview the independents this year. All of New York and New Jersey Tech fans are very upset. I'm sorry, NJIT.
NYIT. Don't call New York and New Jersey Tech, John.
It's an outrage, Aaron. It's the Baseball America podcast. We're a little salty today at John and Aaron in the podcast nook, in the newly clean podcast nook. Aaron, let's read some of our Twitter questions. How about this one? RCT Fetch, who has a fetching photo of Kelly Kapowski as his Twitter avatar, but that's not him. How much do I have to pay you guys to sneak Kansas into the rankings 1 week? Aaron, did you see Kansas on your Midwest sojourn?
I wanted to, and I couldn't make it happen, unfortunately.
So the Jayhawks are 5-4, 24-11 overall. 21-11, I should say. 5-4 in the muddled Big 12. We're kudos to Texas. They won a couple Big 12 series here in a row.
Texas now, I mean, hey, give us credit, John. Head in the year, this was the team we picked to win this league.
That's right.
It was tough. You know,
I'll give you
those,
credit.
One of those leagues that looked wide open and you know,
still is wide open,
but Texas is 26-7. They look like the best team in the league, but Kansas won a series against Texas,
right?
And
was that not in Austin?
Exactly. And Kansas won a big series on the road in Manhattan this weekend. So Kansas is on the radar, no doubt about it. I mean, they did lose a series last week against Oklahoma, so I've got Oklahoma ahead of Kansas on the pecking order.
Right.
Oklahoma also won a series against Kansas State. So, you know, I really thought Kansas State was coming around.
Yep.
And the last couple of weeks, it looks like they've taken a step back. So, I don't know. This league is it's a mess, too. I mean, West Virginia was a team that I thought, oh, maybe West Virginia is going to be,
right,
you know, a top two or three team in that league. And they got swept this weekend, I think.
Yeah, they did by TCU. Pretty huge. I mean, that was another development in the Big 12 this weekend, I guess, was TCU finally winning a series in the league. The first ever Big 12 conference sweep for TCU. And they've only been in the league, what, 2 years or three
years?
2 years. So first time they've swept a series in league play. But came none too soon. This is a team that, Aaron, just, you know, you saw them win, and you saw them struggle to hit, and that has been the story for a long time.
I saw them, they actually did hit.
That's right, you saw them on Friday.
The next 2 days, they didn't hit at all.
But yeah. they scored 15 runs this weekend. With their pitching, if they score 15 runs over three games, they're generally going to win two out of those three games.
That's a good point.
Their pitching is so good.
They're built like Texas, and Texas right now is doing what TCU has not been able to do consistently, which is score enough to win. Because you don't have to score a lot with the arms those two teams have.
Right. And big series next weekend for our tweeter. We have TCU at Kansas. So we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, and Kansas is pretty interesting. I mean, I like the arms in particular in that rotation. You know, Wes Benjamin, Frank Duncan, and those guys. I mean, you know, veteran guys that have good stuff. And, you know, this team is one of those kind of like Wake Forest, you know.
Right.
Older, gritty team. Blue collar, not a lot of stars. I mean, I think Kansas has a little bit more star power on the mound than Wake Forest has. But teams that I'm still waiting to form my opinion on.
Sure.
But right now they're at least in the mix for an at-large spot.
Aaron, the college strike zone is huge, probably an artifact of the old bats. Wouldn't fixing it be an easy way to boost runs, asks Ryan B. Combs. My short answer would be officiating in any college sport is not centralized. It's decentralized. It's by league. These guys are amateurs. They're not professionals. None of these guys are ever going to be in the major leagues. So I just don't think that's something that's realistic to try to implement personally. I don't think you're going to really do much damage one way or the other by trying to address it through umpiring. I just think college baseball umpiring is always going to be fringy.
Yep.
And that's no offense to the umpires. It just is what it is. I don't even try to notice the umpires because I just expect it to be not very good, and I understand the reasons that it's not very good. Hey, sometimes college baseball isn't very good either. The quality of play.
That's true.
And that's one of the questions that Jason Plant, Eyes on Vandy, asks. comments on the high number of unforced errors committed by Vandy this weekend. Errors, walks, pass balls, wild pitches, catches, interference. Aaron, I guess your opinion is that Spencer Navin and Kurt Casale are not walking through that door. That catching, they've lost some talented catchers at Vanderbilt. We've seen catcher defense, Aaron Westlake catching that year.
Right.
Waylay, Vanderbilt teams before. You know, not to pick on the Vanderbilt catcher, but that's an area of concern for you with the Commodores, correct?
It is. And, you know, Chris Harvey just hasn't developed the way that they hoped he would in 3 years behind the plate. He's not really a factor for them right now. You know, Carl Ellison struggled, I thought, on Saturday. I thought the guy that impressed me the most was DeLay, Jason DeLay, who actually swung the bat well, had some big hits for them, and did a pretty good job on some of the balls in the dirt, too. And, you know, Tyler Beattie made a point of singling him out. So he's the guy that I think needs to going forward. He needs to be their – I think he needs to be their guy.
And that's a pretty tough – if you're a high school catcher and you go into the Vanderbilt program, you're not going to, you know, you're not going to find a pro staff that has a lot more velocity than the Vanderbilt staff. That staff is just full of nasty stuff. To use the family version of the descriptions that I've heard of that pitching staff. I just talked to a scout today, just talking about raving about Vanderbilt's pitching staff, and how it's just one guy after another.
It's really impressive, you know, and
hashtag impressive.
You got Hayden Stone coming in there with that 83-85 mile an hour slider. Yeah. It's tough to corral for a catcher. You got, you know, Fulmer. Oh my God, Carson Fulmer. You know, we know how ridiculous his stuff is, but to see that guy in person, I mean,
the energy level. It just comes through when you're watching it on TV. I've never seen it in person, but watching it on, it jumps out of the computer screen on ESPN3. It just jumps out when you're watching him. And you can see why the scouts kind of called him, who's come out of high school, like, this guy's going to go be a college Tim Tebow. He's going to be the team leader, fire everybody up. And his physicality kind of jumps out at you. Even though he's 6 feet tall, he's just so strong and twitchy.
And he bounced back the second day this weekend. Well, it was still 94-95 with, you know, a hammer. And the thing that impressed me the first day was he actually showed a really good changeup, too. But the second day, he wasn't as sharp with his command.
Okay.
And I actually thought, you know, Brian Miller had gone out there and worked a 1-2-3-8.
There was no marine layer for him to hide in this time. I just love that picture of him pitching in the marine layer.
That's a good picture from Shotgun Spratling.
Nice. Wow, I didn't know Shotgun was that multi-talented.
Yeah, well, he takes photos. He's a good photographer, too.
Plus two for Shotgun. That's our first Shotgun Spratling reference on the podcast, I think.
Well, there you go, Shotgun. He's a listener. He probably heard it.
Okay, good.
But, you know, Brian Miller came out there and 1-2-3-8 inning. I thought, hey, you know, why not leave him out there another inning? They've done that before, used him 2 innings. He's closed a lot of games for them.
Right.
I mean,
it's not like he hasn't gotten that 27th out before.
But Fulmer's their guy. And so they went to Fulmer. And, you know, it was weird circumstances like I talked about before. But the point is, yes, they have a ton of good arms, but they weren't crisp as a ball club this weekend. They're throwing the ball all around. Dansby Swanson, usually a very good defender, had two rather inexplicable throwing errors that really hurt them in that game Saturday. You know, the only guy who really played well, it seemed like, was Vince Condi, who's I talked about him last week.
He did.
And he's a great player.
Grinder with tools.
He makes every play at shortstop, and he hit the ball hard. He hit the ball hard this weekend, those two games I saw, both those games. He was stinging balls all over the place. I like that guy.
I'm just telling you, Aaron came in here saying he didn't have any energy left at the end of the day. You're just brimming with it in this pocket. You're bringing it. I love it. John Vittis. 3, who is the radio joker for the Maryland Terrapins, he tweets at us and asks for our thoughts on Matthew Crownover, Michael Russell, and Mike Compton as potential draft sleepers. Matthew Crownover is the left-hander at Clemson, who's a Tommy John surgery alumnus. Michael Russell, who has a great Twitter handle, at Ripple Muscle.
Yes, that's a good one.
He's North Carolina's shortstop. And Mike Compton, another Tommy John surgery alumnus, redshirt sophomore right-hander at Florida State. Aaron, I haven't talked to people specifically about Crownover and Compton. I did ask a scout this weekend about Michael Russell. This sounds like Michael Russell's thought of as a good college player, which he is. Probably better as a senior sign. Might be the kind of guy where if the power comes on down the stretch of the season, maybe you do go jump up. And I don't know that scouts know where he profiles as a professional.
Right. He's not.
He's probably a third baseman at the pro level who doesn't have third base profile power. So in my mind, he's a four-year player.
He's
a really
good guy to me.
We've talked about him in past podcasts. You know, I do a lot of North Carolina games. I've seen him a lot the last 2 years. He's one of my favorite college baseball players because he plays hard. He makes the plays at shortstop.
He's a valuable utility player. When I say that, I wouldn't mean to put him down. I think he's a guy that can play a bunch of different positions. And
Right.
Grind out at bats.
And guess what? If he winds up being an organizational player, plays a lot of shortstop, but do I think he's better than, say, Josh Horton, who was at North Carolina on their 06 national championship runner-up team, national runner-up team is what I meant to say, and now the graduate assistant in North Carolina? No, I don't think he's better than Josh Horton. Josh Horton was pretty doggone good.
He's a really good player in college.
And he topped out at AAA. So I don't think Michael Russell is a draft sleeper, personally. But Matthew Crownover is left-handed. Compton, Aaron, I don't know if you've got anything on those two jokers.
Compton has a lot of sink on his ball, but I just don't think there's enough arm strength and velocity there at the pro level. I don't see it.
Right. I mean, even in the last couple of years, even when he was healthy 2 years ago and he was a freshman with the Omaha, everyone kept saying, yeah, well, Miller has the most arm strength of their guys, but Libre and Compton are the better pitchers.
Yeah,
and that's still the case, and of course, Weaver has jumped ahead of all of them.
And Compton will be a great 4-year player for Florida State, and he'll win a lot of games.
Yep.
He already has won a lot of games, but he'll be back and be a valuable veteran guy on that staff. And Crownover, yes, he has probably the most upside of that group, but his velocity hasn't really come back to what it used to be either. I mean, he's kind of a mid-80s guy right now, and he's got fuel to pitch. Change up, breaking ball.
Yep, I like him.
Yeah, he's got a chance, but yeah, maybe a sleeper if he gets a pro ball and the arm strength kind of comes. I mean, maybe there's some projection there, but I don't think he's a real high upside guy.
Aaron, any other chat questions that you wanted to revisit after a tremendous...
I don't think so. I apologize to everybody for being cranky today, but, it happens once in a while.
I love it. I love cranky Aaron. Sometimes the chat people deserve it. I mean, people do like to...
They like to push my buttons, don't they?
They do. So
they know they're doing it.
They know they're doing it, and that's quite all right. But, yeah, you had a nice question in there about East Carolina. That was a surprising series win for the Pirates, but a much-needed series win. So now where might you be headed this coming weekend, Aaron? Because you have been all over the eastern half of the United States, it feels like. Do you know where you might be this coming weekend?
I need to look at the schedule, but it'll be local. Probably
sleep in your own bed for once.
Hey, that'd be nice. Yeah, a week or two staying around here a little bit more, maybe taking the foot off the gas pedal a little bit, and then I'm going out to Oregon for that Oregon State series. And
that's
then,
right. You are going out there,
and then catching the Sunday game in Seattle for UW and Wazoo, which I think would be a fun one for Sunday.
So you're going to
Brigham on a Sunday.
So you're going to the Apple Cup and the Civil War in the same weekend.
That's right. How about that?
That is pretty good. We've got Iron Bowl for baseball next weekend, Auburn, Alabama, as you said. Fullerton, Santa Barbara next weekend. An AAC grudge match between Louisville and Houston.
Natural rivalry, everybody.
Exactly. Long live conference realignment. And, of course, UConn, which none of the quote-unquote big conferences wanted, and playing for national championships in both basketball, men's and women's at the same time. That is so... Aaron, great stuff. I always enjoy the podcast. I hope that our listeners do. As usual, if you have questions for us, I check the email every Monday. podcast@baseballamerica.com is the email address. Thanks to everybody who tweeted us questions. He's at Aaron Fitt. I'm at John Manuel BA. We'll see you next week with another Baseball America podcast powered by Louisville Slugger. For Aaron, I'm John. We'll see you next week.